a number of unique aspects of this period that we're going into have we've all experienced in them. I'm just going to share with you a little bit of my own perspective on things. The first question I wanted to talk to you about, and you've heard all the discussions about davening in a shul, davening in a minyan, outdoor minyans, rooftop minyans, you know, all this stuff. Are we mitzarif to a minyan? Are we not? You know, you're here and I'm there, but we can see the shot. You know, these are very important questions. I'm not in any way trying to diminish their importance. But what I thought I could add here, a little bit of an insight of my own about the following. If we can't daven b'tzibur, first of all, how should we feel emotionally about that? So that's the famous story of the two brothers. I'm sure you've heard it. I'll just repeat it. You know, Reb Elimelech and Reb Zusha, they used to hang around with sort of the lower echelon people to try to be makariv with them. And on one occasion, they really were hanging around with the worst of the worst chevra, and they all got thrown into jail because of some accusation. And the two brothers, Reb Elimelech and Reb Zusha, were in the same jail cell. And Reb Zusha says to Reb Elimelech, it's time to daven. Let's daven. So he points to the pan that they gave him, you know, to, pardon the expression, to urinate in. And he says, we can't daven now. So at that point, the way I heard the story, Reb Zusha got very depressed that here they are in a jail and they can't daven. So the Rebbe Elimelech says to his brother, he says, look, the same halacha that tells me I have to daven tells me I'm not allowed to daven. So we're always fulfilling the will of God. And at that point, they were so besimcha, the two brothers, they started dancing together. That they were so besimcha that they figured out that their avodas Hashem was not to daven. In the meantime, this created a whole ruckus, and all the others who were in different jails, different cells, you know, were wondering what's going on. These two brothers are dancing in the cell. In the meantime, the warden comes in, and he asks some of the cellmates, what's going on? So he says, look, in that cell, they're very excited and they're dancing. So he says, well, let's stop them. Why are they so excited? So they tell the warden it's because of that pail. So immediately he opens the jail cell, takes out the pail. But my take on this is not an emotional take, but rather a halachic point. Now, I don't know what time Vasikin is in Canada. Here, it's been getting a little earlier. It's about 5:59, a little bit before 6 a.m. So I've been trying as much as I can to daven Vasikin. I wouldn't say that this is my neder that I took upon myself, you know, to pray Vasikin for the rest of my life. The Rambam is a big, big fan of Vasikin. You read the Rambam Hilchos Tefillah, you get the impression that that's the Iker Mitzvah of Tefillah. The Shulchan Aruch codifies the laws of Vasikin in Hilchos Kriyat Shema, and he implies that the Mitzvah of Vasikin is to daven Kriyat Shema with Hanetz, and then immediately, of course, you have to daven Shmoneh Esrei because of Smichus Gula Tefillah. So again, I'm not sure if A, it's a kiyum in Kriyat Shema, B, it's a kiyum in Tefillah, or the combination thereof. It's a double kiyum to unite both Kriyat Shema and Tefillah at the moment of Vasikin, Hanetz. But either way, my question was, am I doing better than I would have done if I wasn't in quarantine, or am I doing worse? Meaning, now I'm not davening b'tzibur, but I'm davening b'vasikin. So I think if you ask the average posek on the street, you know, he might tell you, well, you know, Tefillah B'Tzibur is very, very important. We can't allow, you know, everybody to daven B'Yechidus without a minyan because of this cheshbon of Vasikin. So we've got to protect the institution of Tefillah B'Tzibur. But I was wondering, what would be Al Pi Din L'Chatchila? There's no epidemic. And I want to know, I have two choices. I could either daven Vasikin, or I could daven B'Yechidus. I could daven Vasikin B'Yechidus, or I could daven B'Tzibur, but it won't be Vasikin. There's no available minion for Vasikin. Now, there's a Bir Halacha that actually addresses this question in Hilchas Kriyat Shema, Sima Nunches, and the Shulchan Aruch writes Mitzvah Min Amuvcha L'Krosa Vasikin, that the optimal way of reading Kriyat Shema would be at Vasikin. And the Mishnah Berurah in his Bir Halacha writes Vida Dazahirim Likrosam Vivasikin Muto Likroso Ulispalel Biachidi im Ainlan Yabinya Lavasikin. Now, 2 points I want to make. First, let me start with the last point and then go back to the first point. The last point, he says, Muto Likros Biachidi. It sounds like he's saying it's your option either way. That's point number one. So basically, he's putting Vasikin and Tefillah B'Tzibur on a scale. They're equal one to the other. And it's your choice. The ball is in your court, as we say. Mutal is palel, bevasikin, biyachidi. Imein sham minyan. Now I want to make a second point. He opens by saying, da da hazehirim likrosam kivasikin. Those who are careful to daven Vasikin. In this case, Kriyat Shema Vasikin. So there's a sefer which is called Hatfilah B'Tzibur. Okay, and it's written by a Rav Fuchs here in Eretz Yisrael. And he has a long, long discussion. Again, this was not written in context of Corona. And he wants to know, what does the Mishnah Berurah mean when he says, Hazahirim Likrosa Bivasikin Muta Likrosa Lispal Biyachid? And he claims, for two different reasons, that you have to take this Mishnah Berurah literally. And this heter only applies to someone who is ragil. That's what's called zehirim. He's ragil. He generally davens vasikin. So you and I may know people that are always careful about vasikin. For such a person, so according to his first pshat, such a person is a new category. There are new dinim that apply to people who have this chaloshem vasikin. It's a status change. But if you and I are not careful, or as the Mishnah Berurah called, Zahirim Bivasikin, it's not a commitment that's essential to our lives, then there's no heter. We have to daven B'Tzibur. His second reason is, and here he quotes from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that what the Mishnah Berurah means by Zahirim is a neder, that once you've done something over and over again, it becomes a neder. And therefore, because we don't want to allow you to violate the neder, and you can't find a minyan for Vasikin, so your neder trumps Tefillah B'Tzibur, because violation of a neder is a very, very severe business. So rather than violate a neder, we're going to allow you to continue your practice as you've always done it, Zahirim B'Vasikin, even at the expense of Tefillah B'Tzibur. However, as you know, especially as Torontonians, there's a new Mishnah Berurah, it's not so new anymore, called Dirshu. And if you look in the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah, on this very Siman Nunches, he quotes two of the Gedolim, the contemporaries, who asked the following question. I want a Daven Vasikin on one particular morning, one occasion. Can't find a minyan. And both of these contemporary poskim paskin, he should daven vasikin. Again, had nothing to do with Corona. This is a Gansior Freilich, you know what I mean? Who are these two poskim? Maybe you've heard of them. One is called Rav Eliashiv, Zichrono Livracha. Maybe you've heard of him. I'm just joking. And the other is the Grach Kanevsky, Rav Chaim Kanevsky. So they apparently understood that when the Mishnah Berurah says Zahirim, it means those who want to be Zahir right now, today, and they're not committed for life. They're not lifelong Vasikiners, if there's such a phrase. So I got very excited about this for two reasons. First of all, it gives me a very good feeling that I'm doing something without a minyan. Again, it's not going to solve my Mincha Ma'ariv problem, the question of Kriyas HaTorah and so forth. But at least Shachar's time, as far as davening b'minyan, and again, I've been invited to all sorts of minyanim. I call them the rooftop minyanim. I'm not interested right now, and I'm very excited that there are two poskim that I believe would support Vasikin over Tefillah B'Tzibur. So I'm doing better than you. But I'm excited about this for a totally different reason. Because I believe that I can prove to you what the Mishnah Berurah had in mind. And it's not the conclusion of this Sefer Tefillah B'Tzibur by Rav Fuchs. The Mishnah Berurah writes in the very same, it's a three-liner, this very short Bir Halacha. Some of the Bir Halachas, as you know, go on and on. And he writes that Muchach B'Mishnah, he has a Mishnah that's going to prove to me how great Vasikin is. B'Brachos Daf Chof Beis Amid Beis Yorad Litbal Ayin Shav. So honestly, I looked at the Mishnah and the Gemara on Dafchav Beis Amid Beis, and I wasn't sure what he meant. He said Ayin Shav, so there must be something important. And he says Muchach, you know, he was quoting this as a raya. So Bekitzer, what it says over there is that what does a person do? He wants to daven. He wants to wear tefillin, he wants to say Kriyat Shema, and he finds out he's a Baal Keri. So the Mishnah says the following. What should he do? If he has plenty of time before Hanetz to go down to the mikveh and come up from the waters of the mikveh, put on his tefillin and daven, and he'll make it there by Hanetz, that's what he has to do. If there's not enough time, then what he should do is go into the mikveh, and even though he won't be able to wear his tefillin, he'll be able to recite Kriyat Shema when the water covers his erva, bivasikin, ad hanetz. So the Mishnah Berurah is saying the following. We have halacha of davening with tefillin, Kriyat Shema especially. You know, the Gemara says, you know, without Kriyat Shema, it's a sheker, blah, blah, blah. He's giving up tefillin for the sake of Hanetz. He's going to recite Kriyat Shema and fulfill his mitzvah of Kriyat Shema at Hanetz without tefillin. Now I ask you the following question. This is a Mishnah. Is the Mishnah addressing the case of Hazahirim B'Vasikin? Is the Mishnah looking out at Amcha? You know, Mishnah is written as what we call, we call it in the language of the poskim, we call it, what's the word I want to use? It's, it's a Hilchasa de Psikalon. Psikalon means it's just simply halacha, you know, without any conditions. So a person opens up this Mishnah, and the Mishnah tells him that if he won't have time to come up for the mikvah and put on his tefillin and recite Kriyat Shema at Hanetz, then leave out tefillin. Obviously, he's not going to wear tefillin in the mikvah. So the Mishnah Berurah's proof is the following. Which is greater? The Gemara is saying that Hanetz is greater than tefillin in the case of Kriyat Shema. In other words, it's more important to give up on tefillin for the sake of Kriyat Shema Behanetz. Now, what's more important? Wearing tefillin when you recite Kriyat Shema or davening Betzibur when you recite Kriyat Shema? And the Mishnah Berurah understood that tefillin is more important than tefillah betzibur. So the Mishnah Berurah now has a kal vachomer. If we're going to give up Kriyat Shema betefillin for the sake of Hanetz, how much more so are we going to give up tefillah betzibur if there's no tzibur available for the sake of Hanetz? So the Mishnah Berurah builds his whole case on this sugya. What gave him the gumption to tell us that Vatsikin, you're allowed to give up tefillah betzibur? It was this sugya, mikan muchach. And in this sugya, I would be very hard pressed to believe that the Mishnah is addressing itself to a small, cut out, carved group or members of the population. You know, we're going to divide up the population. 90% of the people are not davening vivasikin, and 10% are davening vivasikin, and the Mishnah is talking to that 10%. It's not shaykh to say such a thing. The Mishnah is halacha psikale, psuka. And therefore, I believe that Rabbi Chaim Kanevsky and Rabbi Yashuv, not that they need my askama, but they didn't quote this sugyan brachos, as the Mishnah Berurah mentions. They would be very comfortable to say that when the Mishnah Berurah says zehirim, he's referring to those who want to be zayir in vasikin, without a lifelong commitment, and even on one occasion. So that's the first thing I wanted to share with you. And you can discuss this with your local rabbis. You know, I don't know, in Toronto that's a little hard these days, but if you can find a rabbi to discuss this with, I think this is one view, one perspective. And again, I don't know how early or late. What time is Vasikin in your neck of the woods? Anybody know? Be'erach? What time is Vasikin, I'm asking, in Toronto? If anyone could answer that question. The fact that you're not answering the question could mean one of two things. Either you're a tzanu and you don't want to admit that you're davening vasikin, or you're not davening vasikin.
I'm looking it up, just a second.
Okay. If you have to look it up, you feel, I don't know, that's... Yeah. Anyway.
Shamkar is 454. Zman tefillin is 534.
Rabosa, I would tell you this. If you wake up at 6 a.m., you'll make it on time for Vasikin.
But you gotta make it all the way downstairs.
That's a long walk. Alright, Chaim, you wanted to ask me something? Perfectly.
The Mishnah is talking about Kriyat Shema.
Well, again, you know, there are two ways of learning Vasikin. Is Vasikin a Kiyum in Kriyat Shema, or it's a Kiyum in Tefillah, or perhaps the combination thereof? But whatever it is, for the sake of Kriyat Shema and Hanetz, you're allowed to daven Kriyat Shema without tefillin. The Mishnah Berurah goes one step further, and he says how much more so you can daven without a tzibur. And I'm just pointing out that with this kal vachomer, I think you could derive the conclusion that we're not talking about any specific carved out group of society. All right, let me just go on. I tell you, I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about today. So with your rishus, I'm going to go on. Okay.
If I could just interject. So I gather where this is going, Rabbi.
Yeah.
Is that based on the Shnayim source and others, Rabbi Berzon is arguing that the government instrument, your balcony,
Right. That's what I'm suggesting.
And you got a Mishnah to support you.
Yeah, and go ahead and now I'm saying, I'm throwing the ball into your court. You take the ball and run with it. If you like it, like it. If you want to slug me up, slug me up. I don't have any personal negias. Emotionally, I'm very happy with this because, you know, I honestly have been, I have been in quarantine since Purim. You know, I'm going into my sixth week, I think. I can count Sphere already, you know. And, you know, the fact that I haven't davened B'tzibur since Purim gets me a little upset. But Baruch Hashem, only on two occasions, I missed Vasikin. All right, anyway.
So, Rabbi, this is what you're arguing for developing here is a very original...
It's, for me, it's original. I'm sure somebody else thought of it. But for me, it's original.
But I, what I would suggest that Rabbi do for the publishing...
Okay. Let you know what, Yechiel? Let's just get through this shiur and then we'll talk about publishing. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Now, I want to make a second point over here. And when I daven b'yichidus, and I assume there are other people around the world, some of us here today included, who daven b'yichidus, so I'm worried a lot about Kedusha. You know, Kedusha is an essential part of davening, and it could only be achieved in a tzibur. So I just want to add one thing. There are two occasions on which we recite Kedusha b'yichidus in the davening in the morning. One is in Birchas Kriyat Shema Lefaneha, and we speak about the Malachim and we try to imitate the Malachim. And a second is in Uvalet Zion. And in Uvalet Zion, there's almost a translation of the Kedusha into Aramaic. And I was wondering if we could get any chizuk, so to speak, from this extra piece that's wedged into the Kedusha in Uvalet Zion. So I opened up a work, an essay that I very much love, very much part of my life, and it's called Halachic Man by my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And I remembered that he spoke about holiness, about Kedusha. So I thought, is it possible that we could glean, you know, some insight into Kedusha from Rav Soloveitchik's writings? And I would like to just read to you a few lines from Halachic Man. He says the following. Holiness, if anyone's interested, it's on page 46 in the English translation. The Rav wrote it in Hebrew. Is not something that winks from us from beyond, from some mysterious star or some distant heavens, but appears in our actual real lives. And here he quotes the Psukim in Yeshaya with the Targum of Yeshaya, which are in Uvalet Zion. This again in an English translation. And one called to the other and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole world is full of His glory," right? Meloch ha'aretz kvodo. They received one from another and said, "Holy in the highest heavens." You'll take a look in the... Unfortunately, I don't have it in front of me, but you'll open up to Uvalet Zion. His divine abode, holy upon earth, the work of His might, holy forever, and to all eternity. Rav Soloveitchik adds the following comment. The beginnings of holiness are rooted in the highest of heavens, but its end, he says, and its end is embedded in the vision of the end of days, which we say holy forever and ever to all eternity. But the link between these two perspectives, the beginning and the end, is the halachic conception of holiness. Holy upon the earth, the work of His might. And that's what we say in Kedusha. The holiness of the concrete. An individual does not become holy through mystical adhesion to the absolute, through mysterious union with the infinite, the boundless, through all-embracing ecstasy, but rather through his whole biological life, through his animal actions, through actualizing the halacha in this very real mechanical imperial world. Why does this give me chizuk? Because I found it fascinating, and I couldn't believe it was coincidental that this kedusha that the Rav is referring to is something that we recite biyachid. We don't need it, Tzibur. You see, to reach the infinite and those out of bounds holiness of the heavens, the highest of the heavens, we may need a tzibur. The tzibur goes above this world. The tzibur is a metaphysical entity that connects all generations of all Jews into one Knesset Yisrael. And to reach the highest of the heavens, no doubt we need a tzibur. But that concept of going all the way to the heavens might be the beginning, and for sure the end, but there's a bridge in the middle. And what we are experiencing now, Lefi Anias Daiti, is that bridge in the middle. We are going through a period of time that's very concrete. I find myself, you know, it's going in my sixth week of quarantine. I find that there's certain moments of the day that sort of those are my time anchors, you know, those moments of experience that anchor my day. I didn't find this when I was out there in the world. So what are those moments that anchor my day? First of all, tefillah. And within tefillah, I have to tell you that the most profound experiences that I have in tefillah are that Rifaidu, when I mention the name of a long list of people and I pray for them, I mean it mamish, all of a sudden I really feel that I'm standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then there's food. I used to eat 3 meals a day, now I'm probably eating 5 meals a day. I don't know, you know, they say this is not a very good time for dieting these days, people are getting fat. But there's a certain emphasis on down-to-earth living that I think might be this kind of holiness that the Rav is talking about, the concrete, material holiness of Tfilas HaYachid. My sadness, I have to tell you, just a little story if you don't mind. I was giving my morning online shiur. It's in your clock, it's in the middle of the night. And I broke down. It was before the kvura of my father-in-law. I was completely beside myself. So I told my chevra, I have about, I'm not sure, it's hard to tell on this particular technology exactly how many people there are, but let's say I get an average of about 5 people to learn the Daf Yomi with me. So I get it. I get a WhatsApp message from Gershon Weissman, one of my loyal, you know, pillars, telling me how broken he is, seeing me heartbroken. And he tells me in the same WhatsApp that his wife's brother in California died last night, meaning Sunday night. And my wife is heartbroken. Now, I've been saying Tehillim, not Tehillim, mostly the Tefillah, you know, the Yiratzon that you see in the bottom of the thing for, in Rifaenu, for my father-in-law, and a number of other people, including Gershon's brother-in-law, Yoshua ben Cyril, all of a shalom. So I'm beginning to think, you know, maybe my tefillos are not working. You know about the story about the child, you know, looks to his dad and he said, "Dad, we prayed and God didn't respond." You know, so he says, "Look, God is responding, but not everything that you wanted, God wanted to grant you." So I wrote back to Gershon that it's possible that my father-in-law and your brother-in-law have just met each other, because they're both waiting on line together to get into Gan Eden, because the line is very long. And I think the Gemara tells us in a number of places that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas HaDin begins with the Tzaddikim, and there are a lot of Tzaddikim, and it could be that with this line, maybe the Tzaddikim get first entry into Gan Eden. So you're waiting on line and you start talking to the person next to you. And both my father-in-law that I prayed for so long, and his brother-in-law that I've been praying for the last month, died at the same time. I'll tell you a funny story. My father, Zichrono Livracha, at the age of 39, had open-heart surgery. It's actually a famous case in the history of New York. I don't have time to tell you why it was so famous. But anyway, after the surgery, in those days they didn't have the oxygen, you know, thing that we have today. I'm going back, you know, how many years? 60 years ago. More than 60. Anyway, so they put him in an oxygen tent. So his good buddy, I don't know if you ever heard of him, Moshe Bezdin, all of a sudden, so he came to visit my father. And my father couldn't speak, you know, in a way that they could hear him, but they could see him inside the tent. And Moshe Bezdin says, they called my father Berleib. He says to him, "Berleib, don't worry, we're saying Tillim for you in the yeshiva." So my father goes like this, meaning don't say Tillim for me. So the story, you know, spread fire in the yeshiva. And finally, when my father got out of the oxygen tent, so they came a group of Bachrim, and they said, "Berleib, why did you tell us not to say Tillim? You have to know my father's sense of humor." So my father says to him, "They said Tillim for Dr. Revel, as Gestarben. They said Tillim for Avaronovich, as Gestarben. They said Tillim for so many people that died, don't say Tillim for me." So I was thinking of this story, you know, when I realized that, anyway, so many people. So let me now share with you a few insights that I found in these, what's called Piskei Halacha for Corona, and there are two ways you can get access to these psukim. They come from a joint effort of Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Herschel Schechter, and Rabbi Mordechai Willig. One is through an app, and then you get mostly Rav Willig, and then there's online on the YU Torah site, and that's Rav Schechter. There's a major difference in style. Rav Willig just gives you the bottom line. You know, yes, maybe, no. You know, Rav Schechter writes a whole tshuva and a beautiful, beautiful handwriting. You know, he writes it in Hebrew in the classic language of the poskim, and then he gives you a summary in English. It's Ma'od Kedai. I think, Chaim, you mentioned to me that there are 31 different tshuvas already on the YU site from Rav Schechter. So I printed out a few that interested in me. But first I want to share with you something from Rav Willig. They write the question and then they give his answer. "We have a patient with multi-organ failure who is likely to die soon. If all things were equal, the family would make this do not resuscitate, DNR, and request that there's no aggressive intervention. However, the family has heard, and this is absolutely true, what's going on when people die in hospitals today in the United States, especially in New York. In fact, one of the tshuvas that I hope we'll get to today is when to start avelus, when you have no idea when the body is going to be buried. I mean, it's there's some real nightmares going on. Now, people are dying in the halls. I mean, it's absolutely nuts what's going on. In England, somebody told me it's worse. I don't know. So they would like to, instead of signing these papers and agreeing to do not resuscitate, they would like to keep their beloved alive, and hopefully the situation will improve. We're beginning to see, Mirtz Hashem, a little bit of an improvement, so that he will die the proper way, the family will be at his bedside, they'll say Kriyat Shema, they'll recite Vidui, the Chevra Kaddish will come. All that happened to my father-in-law this past Sunday night because he was home. And then they'll have a nice Kvura, they'll have Shiva. So they're asking Rav Willig, can they leave things as are so that the hospital knows that the hospital has to do everything possible to keep the patient alive? And when the situation improves, he writes a little tefillah in parentheses, then they'll make him DNR, no aggressive interventions, he'll pass on, and the family will be by his side in the hospital, etc., etc. They'll bury him with a minyan. Maybe even more than a minyan, and they also mention him, the Shiloh, they want to bring him to Eretz Yisrael. Right now, it's virtually impossible to bury someone from Chutz La'aretz in Eretz Yisrael. There are no flights. I mean, again, because of the restrictions, I think you'd have to pay for the entire flight just to get one body. As somebody told me, it's as much as $250,000. If Bichlal, it's possible. I don't even think it's possible. So Rav Willig, in his inimitable style, says, oh, and the end of the question is it permissible to make this cheshbon, to make this calculation? Rav Willig, in his style, he says, it is not permissible to make this cheshbon. So the one who asks the question, I don't know, I think it's Rabbi Jason Wiener, I think I know him, I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure that out. So he says, Rav Willig, could you explain your psak, why it's not permissible to make this cheshbon? So instead of answering him in one line, here Rav Willig gives four lines. That's very unusual, but only because he asked them to explain it. He says, Rav Willig, quote, cheshbonos have priority. So that's whenever you're making a cheshbon, and you want to do X instead of Y, it means that there's a system of priorities. And which comes first? He says the most important primary priority that overrides all other cheshbonos is the medical status of the patient. And normally, asking for do not resuscitate implies that that is the patient's medical condition. In other words, his status is, and that's why they turn to the family for the okay, do not resuscitate. And then he writes, and it avoids needless suffering. That's a very interesting point. And then he adds, it's true even more so, meaning now during Corona, there's a shortage in medical personnel and equipment, and as a result, other patients will suffer. Now, I saw something here in these four lines that totally shocked me. Why? Because I thought, and apparently Rav Willig doesn't agree with me, that do not resuscitate is a heter. Meaning, we have to do everything that we can to keep a person alive. But if he's going to suffer, and we can't save him, all his organs have failed, so you're just keeping him alive to suffer. So I thought that there's a heter in such a case to DNR, right? Do not resuscitate. Okay, I have a heter to do so, but I'm not obligated to do so. That's the way I thought. And if I have a cheshbon, why I don't want to agree to do not resuscitate? Because my beloved should die the way he should die after this whole corona business is, well, maybe we won't get to that point so fast, but at least, you know, and they'll allow people to come in, they'll allow a nifter to be buried, they'll allow for a kvura, and possibly even they'll allow sending the body to Eretz Yisrael for kvura in that case. Those are very powerful cheshbonos of kavod ames. But Rav Willig is saying, forget it. He's saying there are no cheshbonos here. There's just simply the medical status of the patient. And if the medical status of the patient is do not resuscitate, then that's what you have to do. He's learning that in this situation, do not resuscitate is a chiyuv. It's a halachic obligation. It's not just, you know, you're allowed to say, let the man die. No, no, no. You have to let the man die. Because that's his medical status. Do not resuscitate. And then he adds two very important factors. If there's a chiyuv to do not resuscitate, it's because we don't want the patient to suffer. And that, I think, if I read Rav Willig correctly, is a halachic consideration. That already jumps it up from a heter to a chiyuv. If you can prevent a person who's suffering from suffering, then you have to sell the shirt off your back for that. You have to go to the ends of the world for that. And that's what do not resuscitate is all about. But it's not a heter, it's a chiyuv. That's what he's saying. I don't know how he knows this. You know, on a metaphysical level, you could say that if a person is kept alive and he suffers, maybe that's a good thing. I mean, if you go through the Agadatas, again, the Agadatas and Brachas about suffering, that'll make your hair stand on end. I'm not telling you I have any way of understanding it, but Yisurim Shel Ava, and it's Mechaper, and it cleanses you so that when you get to the Olam HaEmes, you have no obligations of any punishment because it completely, you know, cathartically cleans you of all punishment. So I'm not sure if suffering, again, I you know, the words, my tongue sticks to my palate when I say this, but I'm not sure if suffering is a terrible thing. If we have to do whatever we have to do to keep a person alive, and sometimes there are miracles. When my mother-in-law got to NYU hospital with corona, the doctor calls up the family, you know, they have the prime, whatever it's called there, asking if it gets to the point where we have to put her on a ventilator, do you want us to put her on the ventilator? And then he makes a comment, and he says, I've yet to see anyone survive who was put on a ventilator. His name was Dr. Fu. You can check it out. So we had a family conference, and we quickly, after a few calls, we decided to tell him, put her on a ventilator. There were people who came off the ventilator. Maybe you never experienced it, but there are such things. Baruch Hashem, they never had to get to that point, and after 2 weeks, they were able to lower the oxygen level, and they were able to dismiss her from the hospital, which was the greatest salvation and the biggest nest in the world. Now she's home. Again, she's an almana now, she's sitting shiva, but she's recovering, and it's amazing what's going on. And yesterday they took, or maybe 2 days ago, they took her off her oxygen completely. Then he has another cheshbon here. And he says that other people need the equipment, and we want to free up the medical staff. Powerful argument, but we have a rule in halacha called chayecha kodmin. So if this cheshbon is correct, I don't know that I have to discontinue medical treatment because Yenem might die because we don't have enough ventilators or whatever it might be. So again, I'm just leaving this b'tzarach iyun. I don't have any way of communicating right now with Rav Willig to clarify this. He himself, in a number of his answers, say, like, don't bother me. He's very terse. Maybe he's under a great deal of pressure. Maybe he's continuing shiurim online. I don't know. Maybe a million and one answers. But he gets very terse, as opposed to I say Rav Shechter, who is beautiful, writes tshuvas that'll be, I think, will be part of the history of halacha for the rest of time. Beautiful tshuvas. So I would ask Rav Willig, you know, can you just point me to a source so I understand that DNR, do not resuscitate, is a chiyu. We're obligated to sign that document of do not resuscitate. If it's not a chiyuv, then I think that this cheshbon is a very good cheshbon. There are a number of reasons here, lechvod hames, that we would want to keep him alive. He has another few questions here in the same thing that are, I mean, small questions, but I found them interesting. Rav Nachi Klein, who I think is a Talmud of mine, unless there's another Nachi Klein in the world, asks Rav Willig, if we want to add a name for a woman for a refuah, usually they add Chaya or one of those names. So he wants to know, should we just add it in our tefillos, or should we do it on Zoom? So Rav Willig says, you don't need to do it on Zoom. You could add the name in your tefillos. But Zoom is better because it increases the number of people who will be davening for this chola. So I think what he means is that the more people are on Zoom, the more people will hear about so-and-so who needs a refuah, and they will add that to the davening. I was a little bit put aback here because Shini Hashem is a major sugya Masech Gittin. And the Gemara says in Masech Gittin, and the poskim quoted in Hilchas Gittin, because no get to whether the get is kosher or not, did you write the name properly, is that Shini Hashem for a man is achieved during Kriyas HaTorah. And they actually, there's a nusach to recite it during Kriyas HaTorah. And for a woman, it requires a public announcement. I would think that Zoom would be a great way of making a public Shini Hashem. He's saying it's not necessary. Once again, if Rav Willig was here, I'd ask him how he knows such a thing. Obviously, he agrees that Zoom is preferable, but that's for a whole different reason. Not because of Shini Hashem, but just to get more people involved in prayer. Here's an interesting question, also on the same. When davening at home, b'yichidus, is there a need for a mechitza between male and female members? Unfortunately, in my case, up until yesterday, it was only nageya to me and my wife. But it was nageya. You know, do I need a mechitza when I'm davening here with my wife in the same room? So the one who asks the question, Rabbi Ephraim Glatt, I don't know him, he says that there's a tshuva in Rav Moshe, that the din of a mechitza applies in a shul, and that's because of something called kalus rosh. But he says that davening with members of the family at home in private, there's no kalus rosh, and therefore you shouldn't need a mechitza. However, he quotes this Rav Ephraim Glad, apparently a Talmud Chacham. He quotes the Shevet HaLevi, that's Rav Vozna, who says that a mechitza is not to prevent Kalos Rosh, but to prevent Histaklos, which means to ensure the proper Kavana. So he wants to know, if there's a problem of Histaklos, maybe even if it's your own wife, maybe there's a problem. So Rav Willig says you don't need a mechitza, but any women should not be in one's line of sight. You know, it's you know, daven in a way that you're not looking at the woman. So that's enough to avoid, I guess he means, histaklus. You know, I was thinking, you know, when you talk about Shabbos davening, for example, a Friday night, there are many parts of the davening service that are not strictly tefillah. You know, there are minhagim, you know, there's tehillim that we read, and it goes back to the time of the Arizal and Tzfat, and there's Lechadodi, which was Alkabetz, you know, one of the Ari's major students. So the question was, you know, can you dance and sing with your wife? You know, you're alone. That's it. And make it a levit kedavid. So I think that might be okay, irrelevant to this discussion about a mechitza, because those are parts of davening, you know, that are customary and they enhance your Kabbalas HaShabbos. Now, Rabbi Barry Gelman here is quoted as asking a shaila. I think, again, I know him. He's here in Israel, if it's the same Rabbi Barry Gelman. And he says that, I'm asking Rabbi Willick for guidance how to carry out Kriyas HaTorah as soon as they allow us to read the Torah. And we want to cut down on, you know, I don't know what the opposite of social distancing is, but we want to maintain social distancing. So he suggests that instead of calling up 7 people to read the Torah, one after the other, each one has to come up to get his aliyah and stand in somewhat close proximity to somebody else. Can the Baal Koreh read all 7 aliyos, which was the original minhag back in the day at the time of the Talmud? That will minimize people getting close to one another. And should he make one bracha at the beginning of the first aliyah, and when he starts the parasha, the Kriyas HaParasha, and then make one bracha at the end? That's what they did at the time, and maybe that's what we should do once we start getting Minyanim back on track. Then he asks another question. He says that if we can speed up the Kriyas HaTorah, can we allow for each of the first 6 aliyos to be short aliyos? And again, this will minimize people getting close to each other. You just come up for 3 psukim. Again, there are other requirements that have to be fulfilled, not just 3 psukim, but we'll fulfill all the requirements. And then we're left with the bulk of the parsha, you know, after pasuk number, let's say, number 18, so we're up to pasuk number 19, and from pasuk number 19 until the end of the parasha, we'll have one aliyah, and that'll be Shvi, but it'll be most of the parasha. You know, it reminds me, this happens when there's a discrepancy between Chutz Laretz and Eretz Yisrael of a parasha, and when there's a lagging behind, and let's say you took a flight and you missed a parasha. So the poskim write that if there's a group of 10 people on that flight who missed the parsha, they can get together in the shul of Ben Gurion Airport and make a minyan. Or let's say Shabbos, if they're all from one community, they can get together, have their own minyan, these 10 people, and they could read the entire parsha of last week in one aliyah, plus the first aliyah the next week, or the second parsha. So there is such a thing. I mean, he doesn't mention that, but... So Rabbi Willig answers the following. Minyanim now are very problematic. I do not want to answer your question. Ask me when Minyanim become mutter again. I thought it was a fascinating question, honestly. Again, maybe Rabbi Willig is very prescient. I don't know why he scuffs, you know, he pushes off this question. You know, sometimes you don't ask a theoretical question. Don't bother me with the theoretical question. When it becomes practical, come back and bother me. But here, this is being publicized for, you know, throughout the world. There are zillions of people who are getting these WhatsApps. And different shuls in different communities in different places want to know what they should do as we gradually get back up online. And I would be fascinated to know whether Rabbi Gelman's advice here, his recommendations, are very sound.
I think that the problem is that people will take it as if, well, now we can start. And that's a big problem in Myanmar, are starting everywhere.
Right.
People are, you know, tired of it, whatever.
Yeah, so, Bobby, you're right, that you're explaining why Rav Willig is very terse, but I'm just saying, I'm a little disappointed, because as a Lamdan, And this is not pure theoretical lumdus. This is going to be very practical. Here in Eretz Yisrael, we're almost, maybe we're already at that point. They're allowing, I heard one gears of 10 people at a minyan, and now they're allowing 19 people. Every day they give you more of an allowance, and this is an interesting way of limiting, you know, that social proximity. So I'd be curious to know, you know, I'm disappointed. I'm not, you know, maybe I went too far, Bobby, and you thought maybe I was being judgmental. I'm not judging Rabbi Willig, you know, he has his cheshbonos, like you say. Maybe if he would give an answer, it would encourage people to start reading the Torah publicly. But I'm very curious as to what the answer is. I really honestly think that there are a number of very brilliant recommendations here, that in that ma'var, you know, that bridge between the next level when we can start having minyanim until we get to the point where we don't have to worry about this virus at all. It's ubolas, amavis me'al ha'aretz, you know. That middle period of time, this could be an interesting thing. The last question that he asks Rav Willig here is about a musical avdola and a musical kumzitz. And he has a double question. He says, we can make this kumzitz for the entire school over Zoom. And his question with regard to a Zoom guitar kumzitz for a school is about Sfira. And then he asks, could we leave out the guitar and somehow, you know, a cappella, and he doesn't mention this, but we can get the entire school on Zoom. And then Avdullah, to have a musical Avdullah. So to best of my knowledge, Rabbi Willig is not a big fan of musical avdolas. Although, as you know, in the post-Kalbach era, it's become quite popular. You know, if you're ever in Tzfat, by the way, if you're daven in Kalbach on Motzi Shabbos, they have a great musical avdola. It lasts for about 2 hours. Anyway, so he writes, it's mutter. So there are a couple of chidushim here. Number one, Rabbi Willig, who's usually very nervous about a musical avdola, seems to be saying, if I read this correctly, that it's mutter. And then he's allowing a Zoom kumzitz, and I think he's allowing it with a guitar, if I read this correctly, during Sfira. And once again, you know, it leaves me hanging as to why. I'm convinced that what he meant was that during this Sfira period, we have to be more lenient than we would in a normal Sfira because of, this depressing kind of situation we find themselves in. So the entire community is not going to school. Give them an opportunity to have a Jewish experience with a Zoom guitar, even during Sfira. I think he's saying it's mutter. Although the questioner, his name is Rav Aryeh Sufrin, again, I'm not familiar, he says that maybe we can do without a guitar. Should we do without a guitar? And Rav Willig just says it's mutter, so it sounds like it's mutter in all cases. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in and out. If you know, I don't hear you yet. Can you try it again? Not coming through. Okay, Rabos, I have a lot more to talk to you about.
In our Chevra, we have our regular Daf Yomi right at Mosigan time. And we have a virtual minion after the shir, the Daf Yomi shir. So, in other words, would we say that Mosigan trumps a regular shir and you know, Zoom minion where we dub it together? And obviously, not the Varm Shemitusha, but, you know, so, like...
So, Bobby, again, if you ask me my humble opinion, and it's not worth much, I'm just giving you my humble opinion. I'm not a candidate for your shul, so I can give you a humble opinion. I would say the following, that if it's a question of Vasikin versus a Daf Yomi Shir, I would give preference to a Daf Yomi Shir. If you can postpone the Daf Yomi Shir till after Vasikin, and it's a question of, will I have to give up on this common davening called Zoom, then I would say Vasikin should take precedence.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Rav, how's your brother?
How's who?